But also in the flour mill there. So here, happened to meet an officer down there, a policeman. So I say, mister, I say, I'm a stranger here. I say, can you tell me there's a good doctor? I don't know nobody here. So it was, yes, yeah, I had tell you one. He said that you will never regret that you saw him. And so I did, you know, and he took me up to one of the biggest buildings in Minneapolis. I think it was a corporation building or something like that. On the 18th floor, took me right into Eugene Williams, that was the doctor's name. So the cop, he said to him, he said, well, Eugene, he says, I met a stranger in that town here, he says, and he needs a little attention. So he got part of it, so he said, Eugene told the cop, he said, well, he said, you can deal with one you do, he now and love it. So he looked over and looked it over and all that there, you know, and so he says, well, I say, are you ready to go to the hospital today? Yes, I'll go right away. He said to me, he said, well, what hospital do you want to go to? I don't know if you got one or you got a dozen. But I know where you're going. You're going to the Norwegian nurse's home.
Then,
you couldn't hear them, you know. And our morning, he went there and then he operated on me and tried to keep out some moon, you know. I was on the table for two and a half hours. And another good thing, they use gas, and I've been using a liter, you know. My God, that gas, that swell thing.
You just go to sleep, period.
Oh! Take one or two whiffs and you're gone, and you don't sick or not. So here, I went there, you know, and then he had been in the hospital there for what, a week or 10 days. So I say, now you go up and stop in the boarding house. It was at 7 days, you know, you get boarding room almost any old place for $15 a month, you know. The Washington, and even Laramie and Seattle and Tacoma and all over, you know. Got the same thing there. 50 cents a day. So I used to go up to his office every day, you know. Oh, just look to the over and ask me a few questions, you know, so. After what was I mean about 3-4 weeks, something like that, so he says, but say, I'll tell you, no use. And he say, no, I'll tell you, it's all up to you, the arm is used. You can do as just as you please. But it can't be said, well, I say, if that's the case, you amputate that arm and heave it in the river. Oh yeah, at all. That's all. And I'll tell you another thing, when you do it, I say, take plenty of wound, I say, because I've never come back.
You didn't want no more sickness?
No. You see, I'll do that. I'll tell you a story about the doctor, you know. My man, I told Carter the years ago, you know. Railroad doctor in me, he said, you had a man. So here, I went, so And he overtook me back and forth with his own car, you know. All service I got it all for nothing. So, went up there the following morning. I was on the operating table again. And he had another fellow named William, but not a union, a younger man. So, laying on the table there, so he covered a flat board, but 8-10 inches wide, you know, and maybe about six feet long, something like this. So he say, "Albert, lift up your back." I say, "What is that for?" "Oh, we got to have something to butcher on it."
Butcher on, huh?
We butcher on. So, and then it didn't take me, it take them long to amputate the arm. And you, the doctor, he came there once or twice a day, you know. And I was complaining about the stump was aching. Oh, he said, "You're right, never took anything off, you know." No, it was just the way that he put it on. And he took my temperature and all, and then looked at me and all that, yeah. So the ninth day, dear Cubs, I seen a lot of amputees, you know, and they look ragged and dirty and bloody and it's cut, just like a buckskin shirt.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah. So when they took it off, I looked at it. And not the scab on it. And not the speck of blood or nothing. Just as white as the day I was born.
Nice clean job.
Are you telling me? And he say, "Today you can go right back to cell for the ninth day after the amputation." I told Carter about it down here in Fairbanks, you know, the railroad doctor. You probably remember.
I know,
Carter. And Carter, he said, "Albert, you sure had the doctor." And then I walked right from there and down to his office. Took my little satchel with me, you know, and of course I was ready to go, he told me, you know. And I had probably about somewhere around 300, maybe something over, you know. And what I had. So I say, "Now well, doctor," and I came and sat to settle up. Well, you say, "Somebody say, I don't think you got much money." "No, not much, but I think you got enough to pay you." Well, he says, "Can you spare $125? "Yes," I say, "and then some." And I pulled up my wallet and I peeled it all, and then I say, "Now I'm going up to the hospital and pay them." I say, and he say, "You don't. I'm paying it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm squaring everything off. You can travel back to the coast, you say. And goodbye, Albert, and take care of yourself."
For $125?
Yes. And I didn't get into a hospital or nothing there. He took over him, and he paid out of his own pocket.
I imagine he did.
Sure, he was a man all around 65 or something like that, you know. But I found that out, you know, around about way, you know. He was worth oceans of money, you know. He wasn't careful of money, but just a little...
had it and he used it for good.
Yes, sure, certainly. But I'll tell you, you talk about the doctor. I never in my life saw anything like it.
He knew his trade.
Oh, sure, he knew his trade. And I'll see lots them for before nothing. I have amputation of arms and legs and all. And it's a ragged mess. And here I took down and looked at it like this. I was surprised. Just as white and smooth as the day I was born, and there was just a blue little streak right over here, you know.
This way, so did that.
No, yeah, and not the scab nor the speck of blood nor nothing. That what hurt me was the tape, you know, kept the worm away. He knew what he was doing.
Soon as he took the bandage off, minutes it goes away, huh?
Yeah, sure, certainly stuck right down there, and the pain was all gone. Mm-hmm. My God,
does your arm ever bother you now, Albert?
No.
How about your other arm?
That one here, I've been having rheumatism in that one.
Rheumatism?
Oh, yeah.
The other day you told me it was going to storm. Can you feel when the weather changed?
No, maybe I did.
I'll
tell you. Here I give another, there's another good doctor. I got no use for haggling, you know. Mm-hmm. I told him he was nothing but a goddamn horse doctor. That was the 48. Because I'll tell you, I broke 3 ribs here, you know. I had this one down on Hall Street, and that was in April. And it was ice down there, you know, early April, and was one Sunday morning, went out there to sweep out, and there was a little snow, you know. And I didn't think it was water underneath, and I was sweeping, you know, but my feet slipped underneath, and I had stepped, you know, and I fell right on the corner here, you know, and broke 3 ribs right alongside the spine. Mm. At that time, I was getting well fed, you know.
Dr. Schabel come to Alaska in the Indian service.
Aye, he did.
To administer medicine to the Indian surgery.
Yeah, well, sure. When they come up here, you know. You see, Schabel, you know. He's born and raised in South Africa, you know.
Yes, I know him. He will be.
And you see his certificate for medicine, you know. He got that in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Well, that's right on the wall, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So here. So what in heck was that was doing? Yeah, that's Schabel, you know.
About your ribs.
Yeah, no, it's you. But I come back now is that rheumatism in that arm there, you know. So I went down there, you know, and heck, good God, say. So he got me down dressed there and put down the X-ray table, you know, and the girl did, he just laughed it to her, you know, and when she had it all done, she took it out in the black room, you know, and went in and called him, and they say, Albert, you're coming out here and take a look. All right. So I went out then, you see, when you've seen the X-ray, and they got the light back out, you know, you'll see everything.
Yeah.
So he had a pencil, so he pointed right at the knob of the elbows. So you see that little thing on the knob of the elbow there. Yeah, I say, what is that for? That's sign of rheumatism. I'll tell you some more. This is quite a story, because I got some more that I got down to. Girl Cannon, September School in Anchorage, he was there, you know, and he told me he said, same winter. So here, Scheibel, you know, he gave me the X-ray, you know, and looked at it. So he said, I'll tell you something now, but let that day go for a while, see how it will turn out. See, that rheumatism disappeared. So one day he met me uptown, so he says, how's the rheumatism? Had this disappearing? You see, I thought so. That's all right, just leave it alone, you see. You'll be all right. Mm-hmm. So they came down to Gulkainam, no? There another story came in, you know, but the same way. He was sitting by the school in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. And he got it in that ankle down here. And the doctor, he axed it, and then he looked at it, and he showed him that little knob on the ankle there, you know. And he asked him, too, what it was, you know. Say, that's in the rheumatism. And he told him, he said, hey, just leave it alone for a while and see how it works. When I'm at the school school superintendent Gulkana, he was an instrument there, man there, you know, and I was working on the big gal fields. You couldn't do that with a foot like that, you know. And I was checking gal down there. And he said, exactly the same as Scheibel told you, so did the other doctor tell me, he says. Leave it alone.
Albert here is going to tell me a little bit about Mount Katmai, the volcano, when it blew up in Alaska.
1912. Okay. Here.
You go ahead and tell it right
now. Oh, yes. Now, here, I'll tell you something there, you know. This was in the spring of 1912. Me and Bob Lang and Bert Harper, we was all three of us trapping down at Volcano, or down at Chickalong Bay. And we was going up to Knick and working the quartz mines up there. And it was just about where the anchorage is right now, you know, right in the middle of the bay there. Somewhere around 9 o'clock in the evening. Was an explosion. And I've been handling a lot of dynamite, and I knew exactly what it would be, you know. It sounds like somebody was throwing stumps.
Mm-hmm.
And I say to Bert and Bob, I say, I wonder who the heck is throwing stumps up here. Well, we didn't pay no more attention. We went up to Knick, you know, and there's a little spring just a little below, you know, we put up a little pup tent there, you know, and there we stayed, you know. So we got work in the mines. There was half a dozen mines up there, and the youth not a wide man, you know, and we wouldn't have any instant. It's only place to get. I mean, Anchorage wasn't on the map for nothing, you know. So here's the following morning, and we knew what it was. Everything was cloudy, you know, and all the kind of gas all over Helvetic, as you know. Mm-hmm. As it blew clear up to Dawson in Yukon Territory and clear down to Vancouver, BC. You figure out what eruption it was. Miles up in the air. And there comes a gas boat in there, you know. Chase. Captain Kramer, he owns it, you know, he was a mail boat and freighter from Saldova and Nick and all up there, in that, you know, back and forth. A mail. So I happened to be standing there, so I say, are you doing? No, I say, I'm not. I say, will you go down there and try to clean out my boat and get as much ashes off it? Sure, I said, well, Hey, it was so. And I'll tell you, I never left it anything to have yet at the ashes. My mother happy. I got rid of all I had to be still dumped over, you know. But it's just like lead.
Heavy material.
Oh yeah. But there you see there. That was from Kettmeyer. And there's got about 10,000 smokes, you know, you've probably heard about it.
The Valley of 10,000 Smokes, yes.
Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, here's one thing you should have seen now. The Standard Oil, the Sentinel fit down there to Kettmeyer in the Valley of Smoke. Oh, that's a number of years ago, you know. I was down alive and couldn't have come up here, you know. And they had it here in the Lacey Street Theater, you know. Free for everybody. My, what a wonderful scene. And they had some photographers too, though. They was that do their own, you know. There was the value of 10,000 smokes, you know. See, the smoke coming up all over, you know. And so the cricks and rivers coming there, you're boiling hot, you know. And talking a scoop of country. Taking miles and miles, you know. They got a reservation on that there now. Yeah, that pitch, I've been telling lots of them, I said, my God, what a wonderful picture.
This is the end of this visit with Albert Trananon by Harry L. Hughes of Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska, and this tape was recorded for the use of the Pioneers of Alaska and the Yukon Order of Pioneers. And today was July the 5th, 1962, at Fairbanks, Alaska.
This is August the 5th, Sunday,
Sunday. Yeah.
1962,
yeah.
And I'm at Albert Trananon's home here in Fairbanks,
yeah.
And the number is
1936 Eagan Avenue.
All right, now, Albert, I'm going to ask you some questions on here.
Yeah, sure.
This is Harry Hughes, recording for Igloo 4 and Pioneers of Alaska. First, I want your full name and spell it out on the tape.
Full name?
Yeah, Albert, spell it, and then your last name and spell it.
Albert. You want me to spell it? A-L-B-E-R-T. And Wilhelm, W-I-L-H-E-L-M, Wilhelm. And Trana, T-R-A-N-A.
You were born what date?
16th of December, 1882.
1882. And what town?
Namsos, Norway.
Spell that name of the town.
N-A-M-S-O-S. N-A-M-S-O-S.
In Norway?
Yeah.
And what year did you leave Norway?
I left Norway, that was in 1905. And came into America on the White Star. By the way of Halifax and Montreal, and come into Chicago and change the train there, and got from one train and on the UP, and then went from there and into on another route, you know, that came through Laramie in Wyoming, you know, went out west. Clear out to Seattle here.
Mm. That was in 1905?
That was 1905.
Mm-hmm. You landed in Seattle?
No, I landed in Laramie, Wyoming.
Oh, in Laramie, Wyoming, and then what year did you get to Seattle?
Seattle? I got to Seattle, that was around late part of 1906.
1906?
Yeah. I was around Seattle, you know, on the coast there for quite a long time, in a logging camp and one thing and another. And subcontracting Seattle too, you know, quite a lot. And the streets and the inside walks and works and one thing and all. I done an awful lot of
jobs. And how long was it before you started for Alaska?
I'll tell you, yon did there, now we were coming, you see.
Okay, I'll let you talk.
Yeah, then you see. We had a panic there in 1907, you probably remember.
I remember the panic.
Yeah. And that started somewhere in late about October or first part of November. And you see, by trade was a printer, you know, from the old country. I'll come back to that a little later on. And I happened to meet a reporter, you know, he was working on the PI.
The PI is the Post Intelliger.
Yeah, sure. And so he says, what are you going to do now when you get hard times? Oh, I say, heck, I say, I'll eat somehow or another. And so he said, but I was over in Tacoma yesterday. Then get you back on your old trade, the printer. They want a printer over there. So I say, I don't know, I never liked the inside trade, you know. But so he said, I'm going over there tonight, I got to. So you want to go over? And I said, I'm sure, I say, you can do that. If you want to. We live right over Westlake Avenue, you know, and crew together. And the PI was right down on the Fort Avenue, just a little below Pike, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know it was.
And so he come back the same evening, no, the following evening, come right up and he say, you can go right back there to, out to Tacoma, and work there on that paper, they want the printer there. And so I did go over, and at that time, you know, they gave me $25 a week, you know, for 5.5 days a week.
That was big money then.
Oh, yes, are you telling me? So I started to work there, and I worked there, you know, that winter, and we had the script, you know. And I had all my friends in Seattle, so I used to go around the saloons, you know,
catching the script.
Yes, no, not the script, but the small change below a dollar.
Oh.
You, You couldn't get a dollar, but down below the 4 bits and 2 bits and 5 and 10 cents. There was no nickels, no pennies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a pocket full of that coming over to the Seattle, you know, because that skip was only good in Tacoma and good in Seattle, wherever you got them, you know.
That only in the place you got it?
No, yeah, that was all. Mm. It's good in the bank, you know, and all the stores and fish. So here, I went out there, you know, every Saturday I hit in for Seattle, they had an interurban, and then they had two boats going to be flying.
The interurban line was an electric line.
Yeah, I
remember the line.
And then they had two boats, you know, with Indianapolis and Arico.
I remember them.
Yeah, they took turnabouts in that half east, you know.
Mm.
Oh, yes. So here, and sad night come, then I went back, and I had to use the American money, the small change, you know, even buy the tickets. So here, I worked there, you know, till when the paddock started to let up. That must have been somewhere on late part of February or first part of March. And just about that time, you know, he was building a cover of a railroad, and he was advertised in the papers in Seattle, you know.
They used to advertise on the employment offices. Go to Alaska.
Oh, yeah. But this came right in the paper, you know. Mm. Oh, no, he. And they say, want the railroaders?
Mm.
Preferable Irish or Swedes.
Mm, that's right.
Sure, so. So here, then I went from there, you know, and You ride from Seattle and up to Alaska, you're for $35, you know. Yeah, it's the rich. Sure, it did cost that travel them days. So here, then I went up there, and then I went to work. First I worked at 55, just about you was taken up. Snow sheds.
Oh, yeah.
That's right in the 49 and 55.
Yeah,
I'm just telling you, you know, so I have. So I went in there. I worked there, you know, there where we started to shovel snow. There were 1,500 men that camped, you know, shoveled them snow over the snow slides, you know, where I was telling the killed foreman there on one slide. The one they heaved off with the black powder.
To blow them out?
Yeah, sure. So I stayed there for a while, you know, and then got a river opened up, and then I went down to 49, right across the lake there, you know, where they put that big bridge over.
Mm-hmm.
So on the Cordova side, mm-hmm. the 49s and 52s on this side.
Mm-hmm.
Went down there and there I worked, you know, in a little of everything, yeah, in among the town here. There were the comes in something, you know. So I had that big glacier there, Charles Glacier up above, Myers Glacier up above, and Charles Glacier down below.
That's right.
And you see, in autumn then, it was an awful lot of iceberg, big ones you coming down.
You got big chunks of ice coming down.
Yes, and you see, there they was building the bridge, and they had the big casings. And they went 95 feet down below the top of the water, you know, and you had to be, the floor was maybe 25, 30 in them casings to even bulldoze the big rocks down without going out of the hole. Oh, that was layout. Anyway,
That was in 1908.
Yeah, 1908 you went. Yeah, there. Sure, yeah, because I bought them years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I went out from there down here and took in the Seattle acquisition. Mm-hmm. Well, the bunch was dead. No, cost little or nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Tell you plenty about that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so here. There I went out there, you know, and I developed them icebergs. An Irishman, he was a powder monkey. And we had a speedboat. So he bundled up maybe 18 or 20 sticks of dynamite, you know, and tied them together and a long fuse on them. And I had to climb up on them icebergs, you know, found a crevice here, crevice there, you know. If I had two or three bunch, and I tried to get rid of them, you know, but then I had to hurry for shore, because when they blew up, they made no fun smell. And we had to be at shore to throw the waves clear up, you know. Yeah, so I stayed there and I done that, you know. Till I got tired of that and I got on another job. They had a boat going in between, you know, and a hand freight there.
Hand freight?
Yeah, hand freight. The high dock, you know, on both sides. And we had a chute down there. Dynamite and black powder and groceries and everything else went down, but we hid right down the chute and had a big bundle of rope down there where they hit, you know, so they won't hit nothing solid.
Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't blow up.
Yeah, well, not only blow up, but for the bust the crates and everything too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was working there. Oh, here I'll get this all. We unload all kinds of freight. And in a moment we had to unload some pilings, unload them on the upper side, you know. And they had no cranes, they would have stiff legs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what they are?
I know what stiff legs are.
Yeah, so here, they were coming, one of them escaped, you know, with me. So, I was in one end, they had them outside pilings, you know, and then I took in two flat cars, and then that stiff leg, you know, they was took it easy, you know, they tried to get that hook right in the center of the log, you know, so they say bounce, and I was steered on one end and the other guy on the other, you know, they was hopeful, careful, you know, about all that there. But that's one day, you know, you come up and somehow or another that piling swayed, you know, a little, and you see, don't take much, you know, and she hit me right in the belly, you know. Oh, that went on the upper side and right out the Copper River. Ice cold. I was a good swimmer, you know. I swim right into the piling and was hanging on there till I come with the water, you know. That was one of them. And then was there, you know, right down below us, you know. There's a big gold that takes up like you see out there, you know. And right in there, they had a powder house. And it was a third of your life, because I remember that, because say if it happened tomorrow, it would have been 40 lives in celebration. And you see, must have got some water into the black powder, because what the heck do you call it, they've got a name to it, I got right at the end too, you know, with the explode.
Mm-hmm.
And got in there combustion.
Mm-hmm.
The word of God in the end is that they'll come with it, and the whole thing flew up to 29.
Combustion. You mean combustion?
Sure. The whole dynamite blast and black powder went up to 29 tons of it, you know, right?
29 tons?
Yeah. And we was more but about a half a mile or maybe a little more, not much. And was then up high, you know, but that all the ticket was really what saved us. But we were deep for several days after.
The blast was so loud it made you deep.
Oh yeah, sure. 29 tons of black powder and dynamite, I'll tell you, you got some force because I've been handling lots of it. So here. Then I stayed there till the following that was in 8 and fall of 9 in the winter. And then when they come out to, I think it was in June, the burns was quit, you know, to go down to Seattle and take in the Seattle accusation in 1909. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we could travel for little or nothing. And before going farther, you see up there, we got only 30 cents an hour, 11 hour day, you know. Mm-hmm. 3.30 a day, and then the dollar for boardroom. Well, so there you see, it kept down on it. As I went out, got a shell, cost only $35 on the steerage, on the board. And got down there, we took in the accusation, and then at that time, was rafting of some Indian land in some reservations, Spokane and Codaline and Flathead Reservation. We took that in, went in there. All you had to do is sign your name in the book, you know. There was numbers there, you know, and sign your name, then you paid a dollar. That was all to do to come out on the drawing, on all three of them. And the price of the whole all three reservations went out to Caroline, was a California woman, won it, and was valued at that time at $65,000. 1909, you can figure what it would be today.
Oh, yeah.
And all that there out that little small money. Yeah. And when I got out of that, you know, I didn't go back, not no more. But therefore I got in with two girls, you see, we sitting in between, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was some Jews was up in Noom, and they made some money there, you know, and there was a little girl up on loose rubber. And they invested in a flock of money, you know. I thought myself, had they are crazy, go and invest money in there, there won't be much, maybe a few flakes, you know. And in a Lewis River, where they got up, that's right, and that what the girl's father and mother is, she stopped there and boarded there, you know, that was on their land, you know, where the word was. There was an 18-foot fall there, and that they built the...
That's on what river?
Lewis River. Yeah, not very far from Kalama.
Kalama, I know what
that is. Sure. Jakob. It's right on the railroad. We got out on the railroad and when come Washington, you know, come to Portland, that's the first stop, you know, and then there's a side road going up there, long road, up to Jackalt, that's probably around 20, 25 miles up there, and then the Lewis River comes cutting through there, you know, down to Kalama. Well, so I stayed there that summer. And I got up in party for the hand, dear, too, you know. And I was an engineer, a ship engineer, was a regular engineer from license and everything, ship engineer. And so me and him, you was the two bosses, you know. And we sat up, we had a heck of a big hydraulic pump here. Double header, you know. Mm-hmm. Used that for the hydraulic. She threw out a stream, there was 14-inch stream, you know. Oh, yes, it was a big hydraulic joint.
You were using that for mining?
Yeah, there was mining there, you know. Mm-hmm. It was taken out a few speck of gold, you know. The Nasir down there, and he picked up some quartz, you know, with gold in it. And I was a good friend with him. I used to go in there, you know, he pounded that up in the mortar, you know, till he got it fine, you know, and then he put some acid in there. Now he say, take a good look at that there. I looked at it. And shucks, I say, what is that there? No, like a little pearl, you know. I noticed it was gold, you know. I say, where did that come from? That come right in the rock. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I don't laugh there, you know. Mm-hmm. But then when they got that gold, you know, then Lamb, that's what the engineer, you know. He took the day shift and I took night shift. Oh, shucks, that was right up, you know. Then I quit, you know. Then when we went down to Vancouver, there's two girls with us and their mother, you know. And a partner of mine, you know, he went to his mother, you know. Me, I went to them two girls. Oh yeah. that's where my picture came from. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So, and then?
Now, when you finished up there, when did you start to come north to stay?
I'll tell you. Now, come north. I didn't come that far yet, you know. Then you see, a little later on, that's when I went in the printing shop in Tacoma. And then that was just before the panic in 1907. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as that lapped up in late part of February, first part of March, and then I quit and went up to Heaney, you know, helping build that railroad. Mm-hmm. And I've been here practically ever since.
Well, you come worked on the Copper River first, and then when did you come over and work on the Alaska River?
Oh, Alaska Railroad, I'll tell you, yeah, there's another big story. You see, it was a bunch of miners from Nome, mostly Jews. They make quite a bit of money there, you know. And they had that mining ground I was telling you about. So when I quit there, then I went over to Seattle, and then I worked there. Oh, carting, I worked on subcontracting, and I worked on one thing and another. And me and my partner, we was laying sidewalks, cement sidewalks and one thing and another on Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. Oh, sure, from then. But then it was when he started the railroad, you know. So and he advertised in the PI and the Times, you know, he wanted this railroad, this preferably Irish and Swedes, you know. And then I quit there and I went up north. I'll tell you, that was 1910.
You come in 1910 on the Alaska Railroad?
Yeah, not Alaska Railroad.
Where did you come to?
I picked up in the departure, you know, and we was thinking to hit Bridrod.
I did a rod, sir.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you see, then we headed into Seward. We walked across there, you know, this thing on the head in. They took the wrong trip. Instead of going up and ahead of the turning arm, we went out to Sunrise, you know, so we had to go right back, you know. Mm-hmm. That was getting toward fall. On the winter trail, and we slept off, because we didn't have much money. And I remember we got up as far as Broad Pass. Happened to meet three guys coming this way. We was going that way. So they say, where you going? No, they say, we are going into Hydra. Oh, shucks, you can't go in there. All burnt down. And a sack of 50-pound flour cost $45. And I don't think we had that much between us. So we turned around, do you know?
Mm-hmm.
That time we went down to Chickaloon Bay.
Mm-hmm.
Not very far from the oil fields right now. We built ourselves a cabin there.
Mm-hmm.
And trapping and hunting for the market. At that time you had game lost, but there was no meat being shipped in, so you could sell anything like the game warden told me and my partner, you know, on Sunrise. One morning was selling to Hooven and Davis there. They said, will you get that meat? Oh, down Chickaloon Bay. I said, why? Oh, he says, I'm the game warden, Shea, I'm stationed.
His name was Shea?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'm stationed down at Seward.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry about that. All I want you to do, he says, you get meat, bring it in here, he says, you can't sell it. Give it away, anything, but don't destroy it.
That's right. They never destroy anything.
And it was once there, you know, that they couldn't sell it. He was right in that turning arm, you know. And they got him in, sure. They got 3 months to the Yale and
for throwing away meat.
Yeah, down at the Valdez. There's where the headquarters was for the marshals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No, from then and on I was here, there, and everywhere else.
Now, I want to ask you a few questions about Sunrise and Hope.
Yeah.
What kind of a camp was it there when you was at Sunrise?
Well, I'll tell you, that wasn't very, there was some of the old timers there, you know, like Jim McGrath, you know. Charlie
McGrath. Charlie's father.
Yeah, sure, he was there. And that the old timers, they used to come over from Cottage Bay, you know.
Cottage
where,
Bay,
yeah. Sure, where the Whitney is right now, they walked over.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of them there, you know, and then right up at Lynch Creek, that must have been about 7 or 8 miles up there. They had quite a big camp there, took out gold there, you know, but down there at Sniper's Point, you know.
Now, there's another thing. On that Sniper's Point, I've heard a lot of yarns. I want you to give me the true story.
I told you, I said that. Sniper's Point had nothing in it. You could some of them crevices. You could spoon it up and get a few grains of gold, you know, but that was all.
Mm-hmm.
But then you got up on Lynch Creek, you know, it was cool up there, yeah, because I had a drainage from all over way up in the mountains. They've been there.
Plenty of water.
Oh, yes, and we've been running down there for generations and generations, you know. No, yes, sir. But here for the medical. But Stiper's Point, oh no, that's...
Stiper's Point wasn't the place that they made all the money.
No, that
was... The story I heard then didn't really mean Sniper's Point. It meant over in Lynch Creek.
Yeah, sure, certainly, that's what it did. Yeah. It was a good-sized camp up there, yeah. They took out quite a bit of money up there.
Do you remember, who was it, Hope?
Hope? Well, that's farther down, 9 miles farther down.
Well, what caused Hope to be settled? Was that mining too?
Oh, sure, yeah. Hope got quite a lot of gold mining around Bear Creek, you know. There's other two creeks down there too, you know. There's a good mine. They're still mining.
Still mining in that district?
That part that I had down there, he was up a visiting me right here in Fairbanks.
What was his name?
Ed Hahn.
On?
Yeah.
H-A-H-N?
No, H-A-U-H-N.
H-A-U-H-N.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He was a California kid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He came and visited me right here in the... was right in this one right here on, down on Hall Street, and, right after I built it, you know, in the early 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So he says... he came in the door, so I looked, I said, hell, is it you, Ed? Yeah, that's me, he said, by God, where in hell did you come from? Oh, he said, I come from Anchorage, he says, I just came from a mine now over in Hope, you know, and he had this old boat, well, me and him built it at sunrise, you know, in 1910.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you still had the same old boat?
Yeah.
30 years later?
Yeah, and I'll tell you, that boat, I'll go back on that, you know, just... storekeeper at the NC had a store there at that days.
Mm-hmm.
And the storekeeper, he had a cognac story.
Mm-hmm.
And we went down there, we took measurement and everything, you know, even the dug up roots, you know. And cut out natural knees.
Cut out the knee, both knees.
Oh, yeah. That was a 21-foot Kodiak story. Exactly the same as he had it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, and we bought the Ripso down there, you know, Ripso.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And... we worked night and days like slave, and we got a half dry tree, spruce tree, you know, with no limbs, you know, straight. And we cut the rip, so that the lumber...
Whips out it by hand?
Yeah, sure, I was up above, Ned was underneath.
You made a trestle up high, and then one man gets on top and one down below.
Yeah, sure, certainly. You
pull up, and the guy down below pulls down.
Sure, yeah. Well, the bait or the saw probably done it, but he had to shove it up, you know.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And you see, and they had cork, or oakum there, you know, for corking, and tar. And we've got all the plane, then we done it all in 11 days.
Whoops, all enough lumber built the boat in 11 days.
Yeah, and all that there, but I'll tell you, we've worked and practiced night and day.
Mm-hmm.
Hard worker to us, yeah. Hardly ever went neat. No. So, and then we hit down for Chickaloon Base, right, and fight that dog on big tide down.
Did you ever have any trouble in that tide?
No.
You've heard a lot of them have trouble.
Oh, yeah, I'll tell you the only trouble we had, you know, was the... I think it must have been the 1911 and 12. It was exactly by winter.